Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to listeners who are tuned for Radio Islam International. Yesterday, inshallah, the topic for the next hour and a half is with regards to cancer, different types of cancer, treatment options, etc. And also, inshallah, specific regards to male cancers. I was talking to a brother a few days ago, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala save us from this condition. Really, ameen. May dua for good health all the time, inshallah. Iman and good health, wallahi, is everything. Now, he was mentioning that imagine sitting in a doctor's office and be diagnosed with cancer. Allah save us, Allah save us. That C word just sends shivers through one's body. Or maybe some other grave illness. In this paralyzing moment, listeners, whatever was consuming your life minutes before suddenly recedes far into the background as you face completely new and, you know, this terrifying territory. And though you may feel as if time has stopped, a person has got to go on, but the next question is, what is our next move? What is a person's next move? May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala save us everybody, inshallah al-aziz, from these dreaded diseases, cancer, all other grave illnesses, and those that are and have these grave illnesses and sicknesses, including cancer. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala grant them shifa'i kamila muslimi. Alright, today, dear listeners, really we are very, very grateful that we have two honorable guests on air. And one is Professor Michael Herbs. Yes, we'd like to welcome him. And the other guest is Dr. Ashraf Wadi, oncologist at the Donald Gordon Medical Center. To esteemed guests, the masters in this field, dear listeners, any questions you have with regards to cancer, give us a call, inshallah. And the numbers to call for the program, it is 011-854-1548. The SMS numbers are 082-580-8070, and alternately, the other number, the SMS number is 48855. We'd like to welcome Professor Michael Herbst on the line. Prof, good morning to you. Thank
morning
you so much
for your
time.
Good morning to all your listeners.
Thank you, Prof. Really an honor talking to you today.
Oh,
and we
thank
are
you
grateful.
For having me.
Always a pleasure. We are so grateful, Prof, that you've accepted our invitation to participate on this program. And thank you once again, Professor. Dr. Ashraf Wadi, Doctor, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi to you, Doctor.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Assalamu alaikum to all the listeners. Mulana to yourself and morning to Professor.
Good morning to you, Doctor, as well.
Dr. Ashraf Wadi, to you as well, my brother. Jazakallah from the bottom of our hearts and souls. We are so grateful. We say Jazakallah that you guys came on board and sharing some advices with our listeners on Radio Islam International. Again, dear listeners, we have two masters, experts in this field. Give us a call on 011-854-1548. We're talking about cancer, how it starts. We're talking about prostate cancer. We're talking about ways how to combat cancer, alternative treatment, and everything with regards to cancer. Give us a call, 011-854-1548. SMS number 48855 and 082-580-8070. Dr. Ashraf Wadi, let's start with you, my brother. With regards to cancer, Doc, what is cancer?
To the listeners and Morana, once again, thank you for having us on the show. Cancer is basically a name given to a number of diseases. And the hallmark feature of cancer is that some of the body cells begin to divide without stopping. Now, just to understand this, we have to understand that normally human cells grow, they divide, they form new cells. But as we age and with time, our cells become a little more dysfunctional, and basically they have served their purpose and begin to slow down and die down. This normally happens in a very orderly fashion. But sometimes when this orderly process breaks down, cancer cells or cells that are abnormal continue to grow. And they grow in a very disorderly fashion, and then sometimes can also invade surrounding tissues. So basically what we're saying is that cancer can start anywhere in the body. Our bodies are made up of a number of cells, millions and trillions of cells. And cancer is an orderly, is a breakdown of the orderly process that normally governs cell death.
All right, Doc, Jazakallah for that. Doc, we have a bit of interferences on the background. Mouth, Doc, if you could maybe just move a little from where you are standing, it will be much appreciated. Jazakallah, Doc. Apologies, Doc. Professor, with regards to cancer, what are some causes of cancer? Prof?
You know, I think one of the most important things that we must say to people is don't use any tobacco product. That is always number one on my list. Do you know that tobacco is the only product that is sold legally worldwide? And it kills more than half of its users if they use the product correctly. It's a bad thing there is nothing good about tobacco whatsoever. And people mustn't think that other alternatives like e-cigarettes or things like that is a better alternative. They are just as dangerous, they are just as addictive, and they cause just as many health problems. Then number two on my list is, you know, preferably do not use alcohol at all. If you must, use it very moderately, and at special occasions only. Alcohol is not necessary for life, to sustain life. Then we've got to eat a healthy, balanced diet. And just very lately, the World Health Organization, through its arm, IARC, has warned us that processed meats has now been classified as there's definite evidence that it can cause cancer, especially colorectal cancer, and there's a link to stomach cancer as well. Then the other thing is we've got to be active.
Yeah.
You know, this just sitting hours a day behind the desk and then going home, sitting the rest of the evening on the couch watching TV, it's not good for us. We've got to be active. And then to protect ourselves against the sun. People don't realize we need the sun on our skins to produce vitamin D. But too much light, UVA and UVB rays on the skin, especially sort of between 10 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, too much sunshine can again cause skin cancer. That in a nutshell is how can we reduce our risk for cancer.
Lovely put in a nutshell. Thank you so much for that, Doc. Dr. Sharafawadi, with regards to a lump, you know, does a lump always mean cancer?
Madam, the answer to that is no. I hope this is the line better now.
Slightly better, G-Doc.
You know, the answer to that is no. I mean, any growth in the body can be referred to broadly as a tumor. And then these growths or tumors can then be classified as being benign or malignant. So cancer itself, you know, when lay people talk about cancer, we're usually referring to malignant cells. So every growth in the body or every lump in the body is not necessarily a cancer. Now, the difference between the two types of lumps, tumors that are not malignant, that are benign tumors usually, they do not spread or invade into nearby tissues. So they grow and they cause a bit of localized pressure symptoms. They sometimes can grow quite big, and you know, we've had cases of benign tumors growing to about 5-10 kilograms in the body without invading surrounding tissues. And when they remove, when we remove them, they usually do not grow back. Whereas malignant tumors or cancerous lumps usually have the tendency to grow back and invade surrounding tissues. So the answer to the question is no, all lumps in the body do not represent cancer. Mm. But nonetheless, any lump in the body should raise concern, and based on what I said, you should still get to see your doctor as soon as you feel an abnormal growth anywhere in the body, because it needs to be investigated further.
Dr. Ashraf, can benign tumors become malignant tumors after some years?
So, as again, the same laws that govern malignancies in terms of breakdown of cells that become disorderly, some benign tumors can transform into malignant tumors. So there are some tumors which we call pre-malignant phase or pre-malignant tumors. These are tumors that have not yet reached the potential to become cancerous. But these tumors with time can most certainly develop into cancerous tumors. So these tumors, just to reiterate that all lumps, all suspicious lumps in the body should be investigated. If they are found to be benign, then following on the orders of the doctor with regards to what type of tumor this is, you know, recommendations may be made in terms of excision or cutting the tumor out or close and careful observation. So the answer is yes, benign tumors could most certainly degenerate into malignant tumors.
Well, save us all. I mean, Professor Michael, with regards to hereditary, you know, is cancer hereditary, Prof?
Well, we are aware of the fact that, yes, there are certain cancers that tend to appear in families, and two of the cancers that we may be going to touch on later, because it is the month of November, will be prostate cancer and testicular cancer.
Mm.
And those are two of the cancers, yes, where we know that if you have a close relative, like a father, a brother, an uncle, then there is a possibility of an increased risk. The same thing for ladies. We know that something like breast cancer, for instance, if the mutation is in the family, especially the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations, and your listeners will remember that Angelina Jolie very recently had a bilateral mastectomy because she was BRCA1 and BRCA2 positive. And we know that that type of cancer also tends to show itself in families.
All right.
So yes, the possibility is there that it can run in families, but this is not necessarily the case. Cancer knows no limits, and it knows no bounds.
Yeah, scary, Doc. Dr. Ashraf, with regards to prostate cancer that Professor Michael Herb just touched on a little bit a few minutes ago, we're going to be talking about prostate cancer as we go along as well. How common is prostate cancer and who's most at risk?
Right, so prostate, I mean, we don't have, you know, our national database hasn't been updated for a while, so most of the data that I'll be quoting will be from the CS database in the States. There's been a bit of a juggle between lung cancer and prostate cancer in males, as being the number one or the most commonest cancer in that sex. But most recently, prostate seems to have surpassed lung cancer as the most commonest cause of cancer in amongst men in the United States. Prostate cancer is usually found mainly in older men, and that's probably the biggest reason why we're seeing an increase in the number of prostate cancer incidents, is that we as human beings tend to be living a little bit longer. Our mortality seems to be increasing a little bit, and probably the biggest factor of the biggest risk factor for prostate cancer would be age. Now, although the number of men with prostate cancer is large, most men who are diagnosed with this disease do not die from it. You know, prostate cancer occurs more commonly, like I said, in the elderly, and you know, multiple interventions along the line will ensure that a lot of people will not die from the disease. So it's probably one of the commonest cause of cancer in males at this stage. Second sometimes perhaps to lung. So like I said, there's been this juggle for first place between lung and prostate cancer.
Okay. Professor Michael, with regards to lung cancer, do we have a caller? Let's take up a caller. Line number one, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Now this is a glue. Let's take your permission and melt it.
Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum
assalam, rahmatullah. My brother, your question?
Yeah, some people are personal what happening to me. I got a deflated prostate gland. I went for treatment, everything. They give you a 3-month course. I did it 3 times and nothing happened. Now my problem is when I urinate, when I sit, it takes very long before I get relief. But when the moment I stand, then it just pours out one way. So I got a problem. And now, is there anything I can do? Or is it a harmful, or can I just leave it alone, or what do I do?
All right, let's hear from Professor Michael.
Please, Jazakallah khair.
Yes, you got a question, Prof?
What was the gist of the question? There was a little bit of background interference.
He's got a bit of a prostate problem, and I think he's been on treatment for the last 3 months. His problem is that when he goes to the bathroom, you know, he feels a lot of difficulty in passing urine, but when he stands up, he says it just, you know, comes down. Some advice for him.
You know, it's very difficult to just hear somebody's signs and symptoms and the way that they experience their disease and to come up with a diagnosis and or a real true suggestion. But if I hear him correctly, he still says that he doesn't manage to pass urine freely every time he goes to the toilet, even though he has the desire.
Yes.
Now, this is one of the signs of prostate gland problems.
Mm.
And if he has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, then it is most probably the prostate cancer because it causes pressure on the little tube that goes through the prostate gland through which we pass urine to the outside. And I don't know how long he's been on treatment and what type of treatment he's getting, but this may clear up as time progresses and his treatment takes effect and the prostate gland starts shrinking because of the treatment. Then his symptoms should start
a clearing up.
All right. Thanks for that, Prof. Thanks so much. Dr. Wadi Ashraf Wadi, with regards to lung cancer, what is stage 4 lung cancer? Allah save us all again. And what is the life expectancy, Doc?
All right. So a lot of work has gone into lung cancer recently. I'm sure the listeners will have been reading around immunotherapy for stage 4 lung cancers usually. And stage 4 lung cancer is the stage that we denote to the cancer when it has left the confines of the organ that it has originated in.
Mm.
So if we have, and for any cancer for that matter, if we have the cancer arising in a certain organ, for example the lung, and we have evidence of spread of that disease to either the bone or to another organ system, in the lung it's usually the bone or the liver, sometimes the brain, and that is referred to as stage 4 lung cancer or stage 4 cancer. We'll touch on this again later on about staging in cancer and does early detection make a difference, and it most certainly does. Stage 4 lung cancer poses a particular problem in that the mortality for these lung cancers are usually quite high. And when we talk from a scientific point of view, we usually talk about statistics. And remember, not all patients follow statistics. So some patients will come back having beat the odds, and some would have succumbed to the disease sooner than we would have thought. But the vast majority of people with stage 4 lung cancers or patients with stage 4 lung cancers will succumb to the disease within a period of about 12 months, untreated. So if they had no treatment further after they were diagnosed, most of them would have succumbed to the disease within a period of 12 months. However, with treatment, there seems to be some sort of an improvement in overall survival. Also, treatment tends to allow patients to enjoy a certain improvement in the quality of life or some improvements in the quality of life. And sometimes that 12 months can be extended, you know, for a period of, it's variable, 3 months to 4 months, most of the studies will say. But like I always tell my patients, life and death is in Allah's hands.
Mm.
You know, these such important things are governed by the laws of Allah. However, there is enough evidence to suggest that most patients will succumb to the disease within a period of 12 to 14 months if they were not to take any treatment.
Mm. Scary, Doc. Really scary. Anyway, we're going further, inshallah, 10 minutes to 11 o'clock. We have a call on the line. Line number 2. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam. The doc gave me a good explanation, but he didn't clarify what I'm trying to do. Am I position, am I safe, or should I consult another consultant?
Like doctor said, you know, you should just speak to your doctor, see what advices the doctor gives you, my brother.
Okay.
All right.
I just want to join you, but they say I got a deflated prostate gland.
Just hold the line. Yeah. Professor?
Sorry?
Prof, you got a question?
Yes.
Some advice regarding his situation, his condition, sir.
I couldn't hear his specific problem.
It's a deflated prostate problem.
A prostate cancer problem?
Yeah. He mentioned the word deflated. I don't know.
But that's what a doctor told me. There was pressure.
Yeah, no, that's very difficult, you know, just to hear a sign or symptom of one or two and then to really come up with genuine, specific advice. And my advice would be to this person, please do not delay to consult your treating physician. It is so important because that person has your history, the laboratory reports, a surgery report, a radiation, a chemo report, or whatever is available. And I think it's so important that we make use of the expertise of the treating physicians.
Prof, thanks so much for that. My brother, Jazakallah for the question. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Prof, earlier you spoke about processed meats. Okay, let's take our next caller. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yeah,
I want to ask Professor just a few questions for myself, please.
Yeah, go ahead, sister.
Professor, I'm 72 years old. I was in Vera Vera and Joburg Gen. Okay, I got this food pipe problem. So they say cancer just up below above my stomach, whatever. They went through a lot of tests. Okay, they say they can't do the op for me because with my health, I got a stent in the heart, sugar, pressure, all that. And now they opened up the pipe for me a little. They put a stent. Now, tomorrow they're calling me in, but I'm only my little concern, worried, is the chemo. You think the Professor the chemo will agree with me?
What did they diagnose with? We had a break in the line, sister. What did they diagnose you with? Which type of cancer?
Like my food pipe, Molana, the food pipe, like I couldn't swallow food. I couldn't eat nothing. So they opened up the pipe a little last week.
All right.
Yeah, and they put a stent.
Okay.
Now tomorrow they're calling me in, so I don't know if they're going to give me chemo. So I'm just a little worried about the chemo side of it.
You haven't done chemo at all?
No, not at all.
But you haven't been diagnosed with cancer, sister?
It's about 3 months now.
You have been diagnosed?
Ji.
All right, okay. Lucky with Shifa. Professor, advice to the sister.
Ji.
Professor will advise your sister.
Okay, Jazakallah.
All right, Jazakallah. Assalamu alaikum. Prof?
What advice is it that the patient is seeking? Because the line is very, very bad.
Apologies for the doc. The patient's got some food pipe problems. 3 months ago, she was diagnosed. Well, she doesn't say what type of cancer, but she had some problems with the, you know, with the pipes coming down from the mouth. So she's going to the doctor tomorrow, and she wants to know. She's got all high blood and sugar and what have you. So she wants to know, will chemo really affect her? She's been diagnosed 3 months ago. She doesn't say exactly what type of cancer it is.
Yes, you know, this is really problematic because, you know, one with so much life to provide support and advice that will make the patient feel more comfortable.
Mm.
But, you know, not knowing a specific diagnosis, I don't know whether this patient is now complaining about the esophagus, which is the food pipe that takes the food from the mouth down to the stomach, or whether it is the stomach itself that is maybe the problem. And that makes it very difficult to give patients advice on chemo, on radiation, on surgery, or anything like that. You know, we've got to try and be very specific.
Okay.
Can I say something?
I don't know whether my esteemed oncologist friend at the other end would like to.
Yeah, he's going to add in something. Thanks, Prof. Gee, Dr. Wadi.
Sure. Well, then, with regards to what they said, it sounds like it's probably an esophageal cancer, because she talks about having dilated or having the doctors open the swallowing pipe up, which we call a dilatation. And it sounds like the doctors may be concerned about what we call comorbid illnesses in our patients. So when we consider somebody for chemotherapy, we have to look at other factors that is going or that are going to perhaps make the chemotherapy a little bit more difficult to tolerate. She touched on an issue. She said that she had a problem with her heart. So what I would suggest to the sister is to go for your appointment tomorrow. You have a good, concise history prepared for your doctor to tell him when, which conditions were diagnosed in you and what had been done to try and what interventions had been done up to now. And the doctor will take a good history. He should do a good clinical examination. He'll talk to you about the options, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and he'll talk to you about side effects. He'll talk to you about the interactions between your chemotherapy and the background problems that you have in terms of your heart and hypertension and diabetes, if those are present, and how they're going to affect your tolerability to the treatment. So I think the bottom line is to go and seek the medical help, to go for your appointment tomorrow, take along all the medications that you normally use, take along a history or somebody who knows your history well who can confer the history to the doctor, and have a discussion with your doctor. You know, ask him about what the advantages are to taking treatment, what the disadvantages are, what the possible side effects are. I always say possible side effects because side effects are not uniform amongst all patients. Some patients have a milder degree and some have more severe degrees of side effects to chemotherapy. But really we can give you a broad overview of what we are going to expect when we choose the type of chemotherapy we're going to give you.
All right, Dr. Shafiwadi, Jazakumullah for that. Dr. Wadi, another question coming up. It says for Dr. Wadi, with regards to breast cancer, sister says I'm worried I might have breast cancer. Can doctor elaborate with regards to what are some of the signs of breast cancer? And doctor, can I just add to that, how important is routine mammograms for our mothers and sisters?
Right, so for the sister who's worried about breast cancer, she's worried that she may have breast cancer, and probably the most worrying feature for most patients would be a self-detected lump. So if they felt an abnormality in the normal consistency of the breast, and we usually ask all the ladies to perhaps learn about how to do regular self-breast examinations. There's a time in the month, usually about a week after patients have had their menses or after females have had the menstrual cycle, to perhaps do a routine examination, that is a self-examination of their breast, to try and pick up any abnormalities within the consistency or any lumps that they may pick up, usually not only confined to the breast but also under the armpit. Another concerning thing would be if any of the sisters have developed a new onset of a nipple discharge, that is a discharge of liquid, be it bloody or not, from the nipple if they are not lactating, that is also usually a concern and would prompt you to seek medical advice sooner rather than later. With regards to the screening that you had touched on, mammography has greatly increased our pickup rates for cancers, for early detections of cancer, and most recently there has been a bit of a revision in the scheduling for mammography. Usually we do not advocate mammography for younger patients unless there is a positive family history, that is a first degree relative, either a mother, a sister or a daughter who are having developed cancer early on, then we would advocate usual mammography earlier on in life before the age of 40. But usually after the age of 40, and depending on the risk profile, all women should follow a regular screening program as dictated by your doctor based on your risk profile. And like I said, that risk profile is based on family risk factors and other risk factors like obesity, smoking, alcohol and so forth.
Dr. Waleed Jazakumullah, it's just a minute remaining for the 11 o'clock news. We're going to be taking a break for the 11 a.m. news, and thereafter, inshallah, we continue. Keep the questions rolling. The numbers for the doctors, the SMS number is 082-580-8070 and also 48855. Prophet, we talk to you soon. Prof?
Certainly.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Waleed, we talk soon, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome at 7 minutes past 11 o'clock, the Al-Tun Trade Islam International. We welcome you once again to the panel discussion, and the topics for today is cancer. We're talking about the different types of cancer and also specifically regards to male cancer, which includes prostate cancer. And the two honorable guests with us tonight is Dr. Ashraf Wadi, oncologist at the Donald Gordon Medical Center, and also we have Professor Michael Herbst, but our engineer is saying that Professor Michael will be battling to get hold of Professor Michael now. But we're going to go ahead, inshallah. Dr. Ashraf Wadi is on the line. Dr. Ashraf Wadi, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Once again, Doc.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Doc, we were talking about, staging a few minutes ago. And, may I ask you, Doc, if cancer is found in a person, we said that the doctor needs to know the stage of the disease and the grade of the tumor. So how or rather, what is staging?
So staging refers to the distribution of the cancer, to the aggressive nature of the cancer, and broadly speaking, we used three parameters to identify the stage of a cancer, not for all cancers, but for the vast majority of cancers. The first is the size of the tumor. So obviously, smaller tumors will be staged will carry a slightly lesser stage as opposed to larger tumors. The second is the spread of the tumor. If the tumor is confined to the organ of origin, or if the tumor may have started spreading to other organs. Now, before a tumor spreads to other organs, its first port of call in its progression is usually the lymph nodes. And we usually count the amount of lymph nodes in the region that may have been affected by the cancer to portend a prognostic or prognosis on the stage. And the third is whether the cancer had left the organ of origin to involve any other distant organ. So together we refer to those as the size, the lymph node involvement, and spread to other organs. We refer to that as the TNM classification, T for tumor size, N for nodes that are involved, and M for metastasis, which means spreading of the tumor from one organ to the other. And when we get the different parameters, we put them together, and we get a staging. And broadly speaking, the stages are usually stage 1, 2, 3, and 4, with stage 4 usually referring to those cancers that have spread to other organs.
Okay. Allah save us all, inshallah. Talk with regards to prostate cancer. Listener wants to know, what are the causes of prostate cancer, besides age?
Right. So, some men are more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer than others.
And older age, obviously, is one of the is probably the most common reason why somebody would be diagnosed with cancer, prostate cancer. A family history of the disease can, in all likelihood, increase a man's chance of being diagnosed with the disease. Also, race seems to play an important role. I mean, again, we're quoting data from the United States, where we seem to see a higher incidence of prostate cancer in African Americans than in Caucasian men. So those are probably the three biggest ones. One is increasing age, the second is race, and the third is the family history of cancer.
All right, JazakAllah for that, Doc. Line number four, we have a caller. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam.
She's a sister, your question?
My father has prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
He went for a prostate scrape about 3 months ago, and then they found out it was the early stages of cancer. And then a month later, he went for brachytherapy, and he used to pass water often. And now it's 2 months since the brachytherapy, but he's running a lot to toilet. So what is the cause of that, and what can he do?
All right, just hold the line. Dr. Wani?
Right, so the sister is referring to something called brachytherapy. And brachytherapy is a method of treating prostate cancer whereby radioactive seeds are usually implanted into the prosthetic bed or into the prosthetic tissue. So these are little pellets which are then inserted into the prostate gland. They emit a local field of radiation and thereby killing some of the prosthetic cells around them. So the hallmark of this is that there's a lot of inflammation after you have brachytherapy. And it will take a long time for that, or it will take a considerable amount of time for that inflammation to settle. So urinary frequency, dribbling of urine, difficulty initiating and stopping urine, all those are usually signs or side effects of the treatment of brachytherapy. Incontinence, that is the inability to control the flow of urine, all those are usually signs of inflammation as a result of the treatment that the patient had had. With time, these will settle. We would urge you to stay with the urologist that had done the treatment and the radiation oncologist that had prescribed the treatment, just to continue telling them and keeping them updated about the side effects that you're experiencing. But like I said, with time, these will settle, inshallah.
All right, sister, JazakAllah for the question. Allah give your father shifa kamila mustamirran ajilan khayra ajil. Doc, a question coming through from a sister. It says, I'm going to read it out. It says, we have a history of a family history of cancer. I've had a lump removed which was benign. I have lots of calcifications, it says, as well as fibrocystic breasts. I do go for regular checkups, but lately the middle section has been very painful. Please advise and listen to the radio. G Prof. Doctor?
Well, I think it's a good time just to touch on the recommendations that we have for screening in patients with breast cancer.
Yeah.
So if somebody has an average risk for breast cancer, and this woman doesn't have an average risk for breast cancer, so for those women that do not have a family history of breast cancer, we're saying that you should actually start your routine screening, that is your mammography, at the age of 50 instead of the age of 40. This is a new, the latest preventative task force that recommendation that had been released a couple of months ago. Routine screening, again, these things should end around the age of 75. Women should get screening mammograms every 2 years, before we used to say 1 year. And however, in a subset of patients like our sister is, in those who have a strong history of cancer, we would like her to be a little bit more vigilant. So whilst mammogram does confer some sort of radiation to the breast, we wouldn't advise her to have a mammogram more than once a year, but she most certainly could see her doctor for a breast examination and even an ultrasound examination to try and identify areas within the breast tissue that may or may not be painful, that may or may not have calcification. And based on what those images look like at that screening, we can then take it one step forward to say, look, these are areas of concern. We may or may not need to do a biopsy. Sometimes we may refer them for MRIs. MRIs of the breast also are very sensitive in picking up abnormalities that we may not be able to pick up on routine examination, and sometimes even with sonars. So I think she must continue seeing her general practitioner or even a breast specialist, so that you know, we can keep the finger on the pulse. We must not drop the ball in somebody like this. Really, she's given us a history that she's got a history. I mean, she's given us the information that she's got a history of breast cancer, and we really need to be very vigilant in a patient like this. So please see your doctor, raise the concerns that you have with him or her, so that the appropriate measures and steps can be instituted.
JazakAllah for the advice, Dr. Wadi. Number to call to listeners for the program, we have Dr. Ashraf Wadi, oncologist at Donald Gordon. Professor Michael Herbst, we're unable to get hold of him right now. Inshallah, we're going to keep trying. But the number to call for the program, any questions you have with regards to cancer, give us a call on the number 011-854-1548. The SMS numbers are 082-580-8070 and 48855. It's now 16 past 11. Dr. Wadi, is mastectomy a better treatment for breast cancer than lumpectomy?
In short, the answer is no. So there's no data to suggest that removing the whole breast when only part of the cancer, when only part of the breast can be removed by the surgeon, is better than one is better than the other. So again, this is a discussion that needs to take place between the patient and the surgeon and the oncologist. Sometimes there are technical reasons and surgical reasons why the whole breast needs to be taken out. And like I said, there isn't actually any data that says that if the tumor can be removed in its entirety, that means without leaving anything behind, that is any less better than having the whole breast removed. Certainly there are a lot of issues when related to treating patients with surgery, you know, in taking out the breast. Obviously, the breast is an organ. It's part of the organ system of the body. It carries a lot of psychological implications in having to remove the entire breast. But again, like I said, there are sometimes technical reasons. There are sometimes what we call pathological reasons why the breast need to be removed. So the answer is it's a discussion that needs to be taken into consideration with the patient and the surgeon. And it's individualized. That means in some patients, small tumors may well be removed very easily without having to sacrifice the entire breast. So it all relates to the size of the breast, the size of the lump, and what the surgeon is comfortable doing or is not comfortable doing.
All right, Chuck. Chuck, the question is from a brother. It says, my most recent PSA marker score is 5.4. Is a prostate biopsy necessary to determine the possible presence of cancer cells?
That's a very good question the brother poses. Of more concern than an absolute value is to see what that value is doing over a period of time. So there are many reasons, or there are more than one reason why the PSA level may be elevated. If you have an infection of the prostate, that by itself may raise the PSA level. Obviously, cancer may raise the PSA level. But most important is to see the urologist and to try and ascertain what the behavior of that number is. That means over a period of time, is that number getting higher, or is that number remaining the same, or is that number decreasing, which would may actually lend towards us thinking that he may have had an infection at the time when his PSA was high. So one single value for a PSA doesn't give us much information. It may tell us that we need to be a little bit vigilant, but we need to see the patient over a period of time to see what the rate of rise or the rate of decrease, or even whether there's stability in that number. The second is, if there is a rise in the prostate-specific antigen, as we call it, the blood PSA level, the patient must absolutely have a digital rectal examination. That means visit the doctor so that the doctor can do an examination of the prostate, and then based on his examination, again, may want to do more investigations with the sonar and so forth, and then that will dictate whether or not we need to do it. Biopsy. But one single value shouldn't be taken as an absolute reason or as an absolute confirmation of cancer, or as an absolute confirmation that you may need a biopsy. You still need an examination, you may or may not need a sonar, and we really want to see what that PSA is doing over a period of time.
All right, JazakAllah for the doc. All right, number to call to listeners again, 854-1548-082-580-8070 and 48855 is the SMS numbers. Doc, a question coming through. It says, I've already had thyroid cancer which spread to 12 nodes. Now I have a breast microcalcification. Listener wants to know, isn't this cancer?
Again, not necessarily. So microcalcifications within the breast tissue are always worrying. there are some mammographic features, and we've assigned names and we've assigned scores to these to tell us whether what we're seeing is a is more worrying or less worrying for a breast cancer. Obviously, with a prior history of any cancer, we would be more vigilant in you, and we would most definitely take it a little bit further. If there are microcalcifications and they are in an area of concern, we would most certainly consider doing a biopsy of that area if the clinical picture warrants it.
Okay. So, you know, there always seems to be claims going around about harmful chemicals in the plastic packaging used in the bottles we normally use and put water. And also, you know, with regards to these plastic bottles, are they, can plastic bottles left in a hot car cause cancer?
Yeah, I think we had touched on this previously, that there is a chemical called bisphenol A, or in short BPA, which seems to have been used in the plastic industry. The reason it was used, it used to allow the plastic to remain clear, so it used to be visually more appealing. And what we had found is that in containers that had bisphenol A that had been made, that makes up part of their makeup, when these were exposed to high temperatures, such as lying in the sun and obviously with UV rays, but some data also suggest with them being exposed to very cold temperatures, as we often do leave these in the freezer, there was some leaching of the bisphenol A out of the plastic container itself into the liquid that was being stored in it. And obviously, if that was taken up for human consumption, that would then be incorporated into the body. So most certainly, there's been a lot of data around bisphenol A, BPA, and a lot of the manufacturers have moved away from incorporating bisphenol A into their products. However, what advice we would have for our patients is to try and avoid leaving plastic containers in the extremes of temperature, either in the sun or in the freezer, and, you know, perhaps to be responsible in the way we store our food and our drink.
Okay, Dr. Zakala, for that. The question coming through, stay tuned. Do we have a caller? All right, line number 2, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Cheers, sister.
Okay, I just want to bring more, you know, you do these mammograms and all these things and all.
Sorry, the line's not too clear, sister. Can you just move a little away and talk to you?
Gee, I wanted to know the mammograms and all these scans that the tests that we go through, does bring on cancer? Is it just a fact or a myth?
Okay, we'll ask Dr. Ved, okay? Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Talk, you heard the question.
Right, so mammograms are screening, basically it's screening for breast cancer. However, there is use of radioactivity when we do mammograms. And hence we have guidelines that dictate how much of mammograms or how many mammograms are safe for patients to have during a year. They do not promote cancer, but obviously if they're used excessively, they deliver a higher dose of radiation to the breast, and obviously that can promote cancer. So I think we need to be very clear, you know, I need to make it very clear that mammograms do not promote breast cancer. However, we do use, or part of a mammogram is radioactivity that is used to try and detect these abnormalities in the breast, and those have to be limited. And that's why we would only allow mammograms to be done when we think they are necessary. So the answer to the question in short is that no, mammograms do not promote breast cancer.
Right, Dr. Zakala, for that. We go on further. The other question coming through, it says, is chlorine in drinking water a cause of cancer?
I think there hasn't been any hard data for that. I think in small amounts, as used in within the reservoirs, within the metropolitan areas to try and purify water, you know, we don't have any clear evidence that in the quantities that they are being used that they actually may cause cancer. Obviously, in very high quantities, they may cause something a lot more acutely problematic than cancer, in that they, you know, they can cause significant harm in terms of burns and so forth. But in the quantities that are being used, there's no hard evidence that actually the chlorine may be causing cancer.
All right, lovely. Chuck, a question coming through. The sister says, I'm planning to conceive in the coming months. Allah give you a pious, healthy child. They want to know, is it safe for me to visit a cancer patient and stay with them for 3 weeks with radiation treatment?
Right. So, more importantly, if you planning to conceive, you know, I think you should speak to your gynecologist. The use of folic acid should have been started now. It's important for you. This is really, by the way, I'm just using the opportunity to impart some advice. You know, the use of folic acid before conception has greatly reduced the incidences of abnormalities, especially within the central nervous system. But more specifically to your answer, if a patient has had radioactive or radiation, then it is safe to visit the patient, even though you're planning on conceiving. However, some patients who sometimes have incorporation of radioactive material, like in patients who've had thyroid cancer, they are sometimes treated by swallowing a radioactive pill. That type of patient, it would be unsafe for you to visit. So whilst you're saying if a patient had what we call external beam radiation, that means they had radiation and they had no medication that was radioactive to swallow, or they have no implantation of any radioactive devices, it would be completely safe for you to visit that patient. However, if the patient has had radioactive iodine, like we do use in the treatment of thyroid cancer, then it would be unsafe for you to visit a patient like that.
Okay, jazakumallah. Doctor, the question stating here, yes, my mother has stage 4 liver cancer. Allah give a shifa. The daughter wants to know, we'd like to know approximate lifetime left. We said earlier it's all in the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but she wants to know, untreated, doc, what happens?
Even in my practice, those of my patients who may be listening know that I usually defer this question. I usually do not put a timeline on anybody's life. However, when patients do ask this question, they want some sort of answer, and the statistics is what we then refer to. When the sister says that a mother has got stage 4 liver cancer, it would be important to know whether this is cancer that had started somewhere else and ended up in the liver, because sometimes these diagnoses can be a bit confusing, or patients may be a little bit confused as to where the cancer had started. But usually any advanced stage of cancer carries a very limited prognosis, or a very guarded prognosis. It would be difficult to put a timeline on anybody's life, but usually when patients have started to develop signs of liver failure, then death is, or rather the end of life is sooner rather than later. The other question was, what would happen next if the liver was primarily affected and the patient would go into a state called liver failure? And while it may not be appropriate to discuss what the clinical features of liver failure are, you know, they may entail deepening periods of coma and so forth. But again, like I said, you know, it would be very difficult to put a timeline. However, suffice to say that the prognosis sounds very, very guarded.
Talk the question coming through. It says 58 years old and had cancer, but now cancer-free for over 10 years. I've not had a period for 10 years and just gone. They want to know, Doc, with regards to, you know, the cancer coming back, what are the chances? Statistics, what does it look like, Doc?
Okay, so we don't know what type of cancer. Okay, so that's very difficult to say. But obviously, the longer the period of being in remission or being disease-free, the lesser the chance of the cancer coming back. However, we have seen patients who have developed a recurrence of the cancer 15, 20 years later. However, that would be the exception rather than the rule. But again, we would advise the patient to continue their surveillance, which may be seeing the doctor once or twice a year, and to continue instituting the healthy guidelines that Professor has spoken to us about earlier. And I don't know if we should perhaps just touch on those. Just keep a healthy body weight, cut back, or obviously cut back on the fatty foods, eating a healthy, balanced diet, remain active, you know, enjoy the sun safely, and please stay away from cigarettes. So like I said, it's difficult to say. We don't know what cancer he had, but the longer the time in remission, the less likely are we to see a recurrence.
Doctor, what about... Okay, let's take our call first. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi. How are you, Mawlana?
Alhamdulillah. How are you, my brother?
All right, shukr, alhamdulillah. I want to ask the doctor here two things. The gentleman's leg is swelling, that is water, but he went in for... They drained the water out from his lung side, I think, and then they did a biopsy, and they found that he's got plasmacytoma.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah,
so can you? Now they say he must go for radiation, I believe. Can you tell me what's the cause and what is the prognosis for it now?
Okay, my brother. Jazakallah. Talk.
Can I listen over the radio?
Gee, sure.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah. Salaam
alaikum. And hello. Another thing is, how does he get that swelling, rid of the swelling on his leg? Will it ever come down?
Okay, doctor will answer that.
Jazakallah.
So, a plasmacytoma basically is a malignancy of what we call a plasma cell. A lot of patients may be more familiar with the term multiple myeloma. It seems to be a continuum with the same disease. And it's usually a solitary mass. So it's a growth of cancerous cells, and it may either be in the bone or in the soft tissue. Now, usually if it's localized to one area, radiation will suffice in trying to limit the growth of the tumor and will relieve some of the pressure symptoms that those type of tumors usually exhibit or exert on the surrounding tissues. The second question that the brother had was that there was swelling of the feet,
yeah,
and how are we going to get rid of that? Usually plasmacytomas may be part of a bigger disease called multiple myeloma, in which there are numerous other organs that may be involved, the kidney being one of them, the bone marrow being a second. Patients may have low levels of albumin, which is low levels of protein. That may be contributing to the swelling of the feet. But again, there is no substitute for seeing your doctor. Really, I can't tell you, there are numerous reasons why the patient's feet may be swelling. A low albumin may be one of them. However, he still definitely needs to see the doctor. You know, heart conditions can cause swelling of the feet. Kidney conditions can cause swelling of the feet. Liver conditions can cause swelling of the feet. And some of these may be present in the patient all at one time. So it would be very difficult to tell you how to relieve him of that unless we knew what the exact cause was.
Okay. Dr. Wadi, we're going to be taking a short break, an ad break. Inshallah, when we come back, we're going to go with another 15-20 minutes. Jazakallah, Doc. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We welcome you once again to the program, dear listeners. We're talking about cancer. Professor Michael Herbst, unfortunately not available, but Dr. Ashraf Wadi, we did have him from half past 10 onwards. About another 10 minutes remaining for the program. We're going to be terminating thereafter. Any questions you have, inshallah, with regards to cancer, some advices, give us a call on 011-854-1548. The SMS numbers are 48855 and alternately 082-580-8070. We're waiting for the questions. Doctor, the question coming through is Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Once again, Dr. Wadi.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Doctor, to males contract breast cancer?
Right, so the answer is yes, absolutely yes. Breast cancer is, in males, is a rare disease.
Yeah.
You know, less than 1% of all breast cancers occur in men. But when we do see it, it seems to be aggressive. You know, you may be thinking men don't have breast tissue, so how can they get breast cancer? And the truth is that everybody, boys and girls, men and women, all of us have a little bit of breast tissue. And obviously the various hormones in women's bodies stimulate the breast to grow into full breast. Whereas in men and boys, normally we don't have much of breast-stimulating hormones. As a result, our breast tissue remains usually small and usually flat. So the answer is yes. And again, we need to be vigilant and we need to be aware that it may be a possibility in patients who find a lump in the area of the breast, or who find a discharge from the nipples, or who find lumps under the armpits. So those type of warning signals should prompt us to seek medical attention.
Jazakumallah. Talk about the question coming through, what kinds of treatments for prostate cancer are being developed?
Right, so there are many different treatments for prostate cancer depending on the stage of the cancer. And broadly speaking, we may employ surgery, which is the use of the scalpel, which sounds gory but usually will effect a cure in the majority of patients who present with very early stage cancers. The second is radiotherapy, and that may be in the form of what we call external beam radiotherapy, where patients lie on a table similar, not very dissimilar to an X-ray machine, and a dose of radiation is delivered via an external beam. The other is brachytherapy, and some of our callers in earlier had the experience with brachytherapy, where the implantation of radioactive pellets into the cancerous tissue or into the prosthetic tissue. And thirdly, and perhaps fourthly or lastly, is the use of systemic therapies. When we refer to systemic therapies, we refer to cancers that may be a little bit more advanced, prostate cancers that may be a little bit more advanced. Patients may need to have hormonal manipulation, where we manipulate the hormones that usually provide the cancer with food, as it were, specifically prostate cancer. And that food is usually testosterone. And we cut off the supply of testosterone in the body, and that usually starves the tumor and causes the tumor to shrink. There is a role for chemotherapy as well in patients who have had more advanced stages of the cancer and in whom hormonal therapy has not been sufficient. So there are multiple lines of therapy or different modalities of therapy that we can use to treat prostate cancer, and a lot of these depend on the stage of the cancer. There are a lot more newer and advanced types of therapies that have received approval in the past 2 to 3 years, but those are for the more advanced, incurable stages of prostate cancer.
Okay. Talk a few questions. We terminate the after. It says, Assalamu alaikum. I'm a 37-year-old sister. I would like to inquire, at what age should one go for the first mammogram?
So like I had said slightly earlier, sister, that the new mammogram recommendations are that if you're an average risk, if you do not have any first-degree relatives that have got cancer, the new recommendation is that you should only begin your routine screening at the age of 50. However, we should continue doing our breast self-examinations. If you do have anybody in the family who has had breast cancer, first-degree relative, that's mother, sister, or mother's sister, then you should begin at the age of 40. Usually in younger females, there is a lot of glandular tissue, there is a lot of density in the breast. It makes it very difficult for a mammogram to actually pick up pathology, and sometimes they need sonars. So unless you have a strong family history, we wouldn't advise you to go sooner than the age of 50.
Okay, Jazakallah. Doctor, the question says, I'm a 7-year breast cancer survivor. My cancer was triple positive. Do I need to stay away from soy products?
Sorry, I just wonder, it was what positive? Sorry, Mullah?
It says triple positive.
Triple positive. You need to stay away from soya products. So when we say triple positive, the sister is referring to the hormonal status of a breast cancer, and usually we measure three things. We measure an estrogen receptors, we measure progesterone receptors, and we measure something called HER2 receptors. What's more important for the sister is to perhaps consider speaking to a doctor about estrogen products, and those are the products that may actually promote the cancer cells from spreading or resurfacing. So there is some data to say that perhaps you should stay away from soya products, because what they do is they have an interaction with the hormonal manipulation that the patient may be on already. So again, it depends on where, how much of hormonal manipulation you've had, whether you're still on the hormonal manipulation or not. But broadly speaking, there is some interaction between some of the products and the hormonal manipulation that you may be on.
Lovely. So I'm going to ask you two final questions. One is with regards to, you know, a healthy diet and exercise. How important, Dr. Ashraf, is following a healthy diet and exercising in order to avoid cancer?
So we cannot place enough emphasis on how important it is to live a healthy lifestyle, and diet and exercise are the two what we call modifiable risk factors that may be promoting cancer. That we have, those are factors that we have control over. For instance, dietary fat is probably one of the biggest contributors to colorectal cancer causing process. High fat consumption increases the amount of substances that our digestive tract holds in for longer periods and exposes our digestive tract to cancerous material for a longer period of time. And on the other hand, taking high amounts of fiber decreases the transit time, so it allows these harmful substances that we may have ingested to pass through quite quickly through our bowels, so there's not much time for interaction. So that a diet is extremely, extremely important, and perhaps the one cancer that the most data is coming through for would be the colorectal cancer. In addition to staying away from the harmful products, there are some vitamins and minerals that we think will help us to try and keep in our fight against cancer. Folic acid seems to be one of them. Calcium and vitamin D seems to be two others that have got good data for, to show that we should perhaps be using these in the recommended daily allowances to help prevent cancer. Exercise, again, goes hand in hand with diet. The exercise will allow us, obviously, to to maintain a good cardiovascular function in addition to decreasing our cancer risk. Following a prudent diet and maintaining a healthy weight, I think these three probably, form part of the same bubble: exercise, diet, and maintaining our weight. And all three of them together significantly decrease our incidence for developing all sorts of cancer across the board.
Dr. Wadi, final question, my brother. Can you share with us any fascinating stories of people surviving and overcoming cancer, Doc?
Yeah, look, it's. I think probably it's a difficult, like you said, the mere mention of the word cancer invokes fear in not only the patients but in doctors as well. It's a difficult condition to treat. I think the most important thing is to try and get early detection. But there have been stories of people, and sometimes we hold on to these more than we should. But again, it provides us with some hope. Stories of people who have overcome stage 4 cancers, colorectal cancers, lung cancers, who are living way beyond the projected time that the data would actually project that they would survive. I think we should have this balance between hope and being realistic when we are faced with patients who have cancer. We have to understand that we are all, we are not immortal. We are all mortal beings. Yet we should have enough hope to pursue what I think is appropriate. Sometimes patients are too sick to be able to have, to be offered any form of therapy. Sometimes patients prefer not to have any therapy when clearly there is a benefit for therapy. So I think the more we speak about cancer, both with the people around us, support groups with like cancer, family, friends, doctors, psychologists, and the more informed we are about our condition, the better equipped we are to deal with it. So I think education around these subjects are of paramount importance so that we are able to approach this very difficult condition with a clear and a level mind.
Okay.
Sometimes we are emotional about things. And like I said, there are stories. I've got patients who we thought really would have succumbed to the disease within a couple of months, who have had surgery and have had chemotherapy and have beaten the odds and are now living cancer-free. But like I say, sometimes it's difficult to quote these because they represent the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
However, there is hope. And, I think there are greater forces at work. Obviously, there are greater forces at work. And life and death, shifa lies in the hands of Allah. But I think we just need to be level-headed about, the way we approach cancer.
Okay. Dr. Shafrawi, Jazakallah, my brother, for the lovely advices. Talking to a few of your patients and people that know you, mashallah, mentioned was made Friday. A brother says Dr. Shafrawi was always there for us. And really, you give them professional help and advice. And I also bear testimony to this when my beloved mother was your patient. And may Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala grant shifa on your hands, Dr. Shafrawi. All the best, my brother. All the best, inshallah. Allah give you barakat.
Jazakallah.
Jazakallah. Take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, 8 minutes to 12 o'clock, your Tune Trade Islam International, Dr. Ashraf Awadi, oncologist at Donald Gordon. And yes, we conclude the program. And dear listeners, we're going to be away for a few days on leave. Inshallah, request for special du'as from Sayyid Muhammad Kara fi Amanillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.